We are a little more than a month away from the Florence Festival of Books, so I thought it was time to bring in Rachel Pearson to talk about what's upcoming, because it's going to be a wonderful festival, as always, but you've got some speakers and things that are going on that may be a little bit more in-depth than normal. We've got three speakers that are going to be coming in. Let's talk a little bit first about the when and where this is all going to happen.
As always, it's in the Event Center on the flat floor, all in one day, and it's on the 27th of September. That's a Saturday. Starting to the public at 9:30 with a keynote and ending at 5:30. And in between, there's all kinds of goodies for people who love books.
Now, every year you bring speakers in. Who are some of the featured speakers that are going to be there this year?
This year, they're local yet rather international in the sense that they sell books around the world, and one of them lives in Reedsport but is a Hawaii native and has connections there. And she has a huge following. Her name is Toby Neal.
And what is Toby Neal known for?
She's written three autobiographies. The first one, I've only read the first one, but it's fascinating. It's called Freckled, and it's about growing up wild on Kauai. She was born about 1970. Her parents were hippies. And still are hippies. They're still alive. And
usually once, always, right?
The hippie life looks kind of interesting from the outside. It was pretty brutal. So this book starts out kind of bucolic, and she went through a lot of things by the time she was 18. She lived practically a lifetime before then.
Was she featured on like 60 Minutes or something? Because that sounds very familiar, the Freckled and growing up in Hawaii in sort of like the hippie era.
She was featured in USA Today.
Okay.
I don't know if she was on a television production. That's very possible, but she is a USA Today author and featured. They write about her. She's written, I think, 50 books, and some of them nonfiction, like the autobiographies, a couple of books about more about environmental things, and then the three characters that she has that are female detectives in Hawaii. And they're called cozy mysteries, which means there's less blood and gore than, say, Crace or Michael Connelly or Reacher.
So more investigational stuff, where they're actually doing an investigation and mm-hmm. determine who the criminal is by that versus seeing all the blood and gore.
So they might appeal to somebody that would like to read something somewhat escapist, yet with a punch to it and a little bit of fear and a frisson of, oh, is she going to make it out of this one? Well, you know she is. She's not going to kill off her characters. But there's always that fear that this could be the time.
What kind of feedback do you hear from people when they go to hear the speakers speak?
It depends on who is the speaker. As in last year, we brought Dr. Scott Donaldson. And he got up there and he started off on a speech, and I'm not sure he had rehearsed it, but it was jam-packed with info. And he really got our audience going with questions, and he could have gone on for another hour. He had an hour.
Yeah.
He filled it.
He's that way with me, too,
I guess
you're wondering. So, yeah.
And some surprising twists and turns because, as you know, he's a doctor, but also he's got a lot of other concerns and comments about the medical system, insurance, which is on everybody's mind, especially in Florence.
Mm-hmm. So he really got them involved.
He packed a punch.
Yeah, cool. And that's kind of what you hope for, right?
Correct. So that's what we're hoping for from Toby and expecting, because she is a featured speaker. She's quite vivacious. You wouldn't know that she doesn't look like she spent her childhood in the sun, but she is freckled. And she's just a lot of fun to be with.
All right, now who else do you have speaking?
The other two speakers are from Eugene. They're friends, and one of them is Brendan O'Meara, who does something called the Literary Nonfiction Podcast. And that he has over 200 or close to 300 in the can, over 200 broadcast podcasts with interesting guests, and he puts a lot of work into it. Hmm. And he's branching out into live podcasts, which is a whole different thing.
Yeah.
You know about live radio.
I know about live radio, and I know about recorded podcasts. I don't think I'd ever want to do a live podcast, but hey, you never know.
Well, let's do one.
There you go.
We could do one. Well, we will do a live remote from the festival. So Brendan is known for that, but also he has recently written and deeply researched and published a book called The Front Runner: The Life of Steve Prefontaine. And it is, if you think you know about Prefontaine, and a lot of people do, and a lot of people in this on the coast who are my age knew him maybe in high school. Like a lot of people know Cady McGowan. She was his high school math tutor.
Really?
And at Marchfield. And she said he wasn't really into math. Really.
She was the tutor.
Cady was the tutor. Okay, she's a year older than he was. Mm-hmm. She was in high school also. She wasn't a teacher.
Yeah. I was going to say, I thought you meant that Prefontaine was the tutor, but he wasn't interested in math.
No.
So it was the other way
around. No. They were just trying to get him to graduate, apparently. She never said that, but I got that impression. And then from reading the book, you think you know some things about Prefontaine, and now his picture is everywhere. He's Mr. Nike. He's got a mural in Coos Bay, and at the high school they have put up in the last few years a lovely tribute to him and other record holders from their high school sports cross-country days. But his life was brutal. And kind of like Toby, he didn't have the greatest parenting skills given to him, and that might be one of the reasons why he was so successful as a runner.
Yeah, because it's kind of an escape when you're running, you're on your own, you're mm-hmm. heavier in your own mindset and everything like that. And he did put the cross country running into the limelight. I mean,
he did
became familiar with it because of him.
And the other thing that I didn't realize, and I was in high school when he was in the Olympics. I was a sophomore in high school. He was very famous. But he actually broke the ceiling that was the established amateur sports world at that time. Avery Brundage and all the people that wanted to keep amateurs under their thumb and poor, which means that once they got out of college and didn't have that support system, they kind of floundered. They needed to have jobs and try to train at the same time to get the Olympics. And now it's a different world. You know, everybody's who's an amateur is also has the deal and has support. I don't know if that's a better world, but it sure is nicer for the athletes.
Well, that'll be a wonderful conversation. Will he be mainly focusing on this book, or was it just
he and the other person that he'll be talking to is named Ruby McConnell, and she's written a number of books, and she's written two guides to the wild. One is The Girl's Guide to the Wild, and one is A Woman's Guide to the Wild. And they're really, if you wanted to go to the Pacific Coast Trail, you would want that book as your starting point to figure out how I'm going to make this work. I'm not just going to show up in the woods with a pair of tennis shoes and a tent and hope I make it.
Probably need to be a little bit better planned out than that.
Huh? Yes. These books would help you plan out. Or just for girls especially that are not outdoorsy or would like to get more outdoorsy, but they don't even know where to start. So she's written environmental books. She's also a belly dancer. And like Toby, she is just a ton of fun to be with. She's really, really vibrant and got a ton of energy and is a very good writer. But she and Brendan will talk about their books a little bit, but also in conversation with them, they said they would really like to share how collaboration helps them. Because a lot of writers think, especially getting started writers think, oh, I don't want to share my ideas because someone will steal them. And they said, yes, that can happen, and you can get kind of scooped on something. But on the other hand, sharing opens up your world, and only you can write your book. So I wanted them to come up with a topic. We sat down over coffee. 90 minutes later, we didn't have a topic. But I said, you know what? I think your topic is collaboration. And they said, that's right. Hmm. So that will be one of the topics. There's no predicting what they'll actually say when they're in front of an audience. But
I understand that whole idea of having something that's yours and not really wanting to share it because you don't want to change your overall concept of what you want it to
right.
sound like, you know, what you want it to feel like.
Correct. Yeah. And I think in nonfiction, that's kind of the case where if there's too many books on the same topic, they're going to crowd each other out. But on the other hand, if you have an idea and it's your passion, you should go with it. And getting ideas from other people, getting edits, getting suggestions on your outline is always good.
Do you think fiction's a little bit different?
I personally think it's different, but I've read a lot of crime, not true crime fiction, a lot of fictionalized crime since the COVID lockdowns had me in my own library. But everybody handles it differently. It's the same, you know, it's the same thing. Somebody gets murdered. How did they do it? And there's so many ways. There's as many ways as there are individuals to go about describing that.
That was just Lee Child, who writes the Jack Reacher novels,
right,
is now sharing it with his brother Andrew.
Correct.
And they're writing them together. And I haven't read. I've got it on my desktop. The first one they wrote together. I have it there, and it's a couple of years old now. I haven't started reading it yet because. Something inside me goes, oh, it's not going to be as good. And I wonder, maybe I'm just judging it too harshly.
Well, actually, you're not far off the base with that. I've read all of them. And that one book, the book where they collaborated, is not up to snuff. I would start with Andrew Child's
solo.
First solo. And I can't remember the title of the first one that was a co-authorship.
Yeah, like I said, I have it on my desktop, and I couldn't even tell you what it is.
Well, you can put your coffee cup on it.
There you go.
I would say that once Andrew got it, that was his feet getting under him, and now he's better.
Is it better? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. I'll have to check that out then. But you almost have to read that first one to kind of know the difference, maybe.
I think so. Yeah, you might. I got to hear him speak a year ago at the Portland Book Festival, Andrew, and very interesting. And he had you could tell it was kind of a canned speech of what he needed to get in.
Right.
Frequently asked
Not a
questions.
Public speaker kind of guy.
Well, no, he actually was a great public speaker, but it was more of a, this is what people need to have been asking me for years. So okay. This is what I have in my speech. And the interviewer, the George there, was very good at bringing that out. And then I asked, well, so what was it like growing up with a brother 14 years older than you in a family, and what was your family like? And he kind of opened up and said, oh, my goodness, our dad was an Army guy, and that's where the Army stuff came from. And it's interesting that there were two brothers in the middle, but he and his Andrew and Lee, who's actually named James.
Neither one of them are named Child.
Right. The original author is actually named James Grant. But anyway, he said, oh, it was incredible. Our dad ran it like an army camp, and he had all this stuff. And that's where they got a lot of their ideas. And why the two that were farthest apart in the family got together and were close, and they're still close now, which is really cool. So there's not a jealousy thing there. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I watched an interview with them, and I didn't know about the military connection, but you almost see Jack Reacher's love for his brother in the books with what they go through.
Right.
So it's kind of cool.
So getting back to this, there is no wrong way to, you know, there could be wrong ways to collaborate where you hand over your manuscript and you never see it again. I mean, that, you know, you have to be careful. Mm-hmm. You have to protect you have to put up your boundaries. But sharing ideas, sharing coffee, sharing how would you go about this, and then sharing recommended people to help you. Like in this town, it's mainly Ned Hixon.
Yeah.
If you need help with your book, call up Ned and get on his list. He's got a full slate of people, but they get their books done, and then he gets a new slate of people.
Yeah. We talk about it a lot. Ned and I talk about it a lot, about bringing my stuff to him. And I haven't done it yet, and I guess because I'm worried about being judged too harshly. But I know he won't do that. But I mean,
he is just the nicest.
Yeah,
he's got that picture on his website of him sitting on his Harley, you know, staring at the camera in an angry way. But it's like you wouldn't even recognize him when you meet him in person. That's not. It's just a fun picture.
So what other things? You're going to have the workshops and everything again through this?
We are having workshops. So the festival is bookended by the speakers, and in the middle, there's all kinds of great stuff going on. Our dear friend Eric Allen, who's the MC for the Winter Music Festival and has a fantastic voice, will be actually hosting at his table a drop-in, try out a podcasting session. You just come there and sign up on a sheet, and you get 5 to 10 minutes to work out something you'd like to read for people that think, I would either like to get on podcasting or start maybe recording my book for an audiobook. And he has state-of-the-art equipment, and that's kind of his thing now. He's retired from his previous careers, but he has an audio studio, and he'll bring his equipment. And right there at his booth, table 4, he'll be recording people's readings.
Hmm. Very cool.
No judging. Right. No, why did you say that? No, gee, your writing isn't very good. It'll just be, give it a try, see how your voice sounds, and like all of us, you're going to go, oh, man, I hate my voice, when you're not a professional.
Right.
So, like me. We'll have Ned Hixon, at 11. And we are actually this year focusing on publishing your book, because that was something last year that people said, well, all this writing stuff is great, but I have a manuscript and I need to get it forward and I don't know how to publish it. And there's too many options. So his workshop is from 11 to noon. It's called From Manuscript to Published. And then a group called a woman from Luminaire Press named Pamela will be coming. And Luminaire is out of Eugene. And they do independent publishing options and ways of going about. And she described it as you can do it full traditional, hybrid, or just go your own way. And they help you do that.
Cool.
We are back with Big Wave Spoken Word drop-in open mic session, and that will be Charles Castle having people read their poetry and have other people listen to it. So it's kind of like – it's a little bit like Eric, only it's less of a try out the system. It's just get used to speaking in front of people. Finally, Indigo Editing, Design, and More. They're out of Portland, and they are a bigger shop. Just like their name says, they do a lot of different things, and they don't call themselves Indigo Publishing because they're something like the same name in South Carolina, just like Florence, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So if you Google it, you can end up in South Carolina. You want to end up with Indigo Editing, Design, and More, and they will do book publishing in 2025.
Very cool. Very cool. And that kind of wraps it up. Then you'll have your speakers at the end of the evening.
We'll have the conversation from 4:30 to 5:30. It's all done by 6. So it's kind of a long day, but it's a lot of work for us and for all these people to get together to come to our festival. And we are somewhat remote for especially from anybody from Portland or the Valley. So we want to make it a full day, worthwhile stuff, and bring on the books. Plus, we have more we don't have more tables this year. I think we have maybe 2 more tables. We have 36 tables. But we also have more authors because people with 1 to 3 books have been willing to share a table with someone. So there'll be a lot of people in that hall offering their books, meeting and greeting, and also all the people at the workshops will have a table. So you'll get to – if you miss their workshop or want to ask them more things, they'll be there in the exhibition hall.
And pricing and everything?
Pricing is only $3 to get in the hall and $5 for all access, which means all the workshops, all the speakers, which is not how the book festival used to do it years ago. They'd have a speaking night and then and that costs money, and then maybe $2 or free to get in the exhibition hall. So we're doing it a little differently.
All right. That sounds – and that's again September 27th?
Saturday, September 27th at the Florence Event Center.
Yeah. Well, cool.
And we'll see you there because you'll be doing the live remote.
I'll be there. I'll be
looking
there.
Forward to yeah. it. And
maybe we'll bring you in September too, just for a few minutes to kind of update everybody again, just to remind everybody so they have a fresh fresh view on it.
And at that point, I won't feature the speakers. I'll talk more about the people that are bringing their own books.
The individual authors mm-hmm. that are coming through there.
There's some interesting folks, mm-hmm. and it's a little – every year it's different. It's a little crazy. It's more of a curated festival right now, and that's been bothersome to some people. But on the other hand, we can't have everybody come back every year. There are some people like Judy Flegel, Karen Nichols, and Connie Bradley who
– Staples.
They helped found it. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't have them, people would come in and say, well, why don't you – I mean, we would deal with our public.
Right.
And they would
– backlash.
There you go.
Terrible backlash. Real quickly, Winter Music Festival coming up in January.
Yep.
You got that set and squared away? You got all the acts signed?
We got the acts signed and ready to start advertising in – we haven't had to advertise much yet because we have our 2-day passes for sale. Our patrons who bought before are buying them. We've sold 134 passes already.
Wow.
Without any advertising. Mm-hmm. So it's basically just online and a couple of emails to people reminding them, hey, you can get this pass now. Discount passes, $135 inclusive of all fees, available until September 15th.
All right.
And then they go up a little bit to I think it's $149 inclusive. Yeah. So you won't find out there's another fee at the end when you go to buy the tickets.
Rachel Pearson, thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.